Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Orcel telephone conference call for Sunday. And it's April the 21st, 2013. Our guest speaker is the Reverend Dr. Jan Biglin-Pritchard from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, where she is the incumbent at St. Stephen's Church. Welcome, Jan.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we also have Larry Mitchell with us. Larry, it's always a delight to have you on a call, and it's been quite some time since we've heard from you. What's going on with you? And I understand that you're hosting Mike Endicott very soon, and maybe you could tell us a bit about that as well.
We're hosting Mike Endicott, a tour of Western Canada. Mike will be stopping in all four Western provinces, beginning with Kelowna, then moving on to Edmonton and Alberta, and in Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, Davidson, Maple Creek, and Yorkton. And finally, he'll conclude in Flin Flon, Manitoba.
Wonderful. How is the registration going?
Registrations are coming. There are coming each year. Now, I'm not aware of some of the other locations, but the people who have talked to me said that they're coming in. So if these areas, then it's time to get your registration in so you won't miss Mike when he comes through.
Well, that's excellent. Larry, you've agreed to introduce our speaker, and I'm very grateful to you for that. Do you have any other updates for us on yourself to share before you introduce Jan?
No, not that I can think of offhand. I should just go ahead and introduce Jan. How's that?
Thank you very much.
I had to get some information down here, so I'm going to be reading some stuff here because I didn't want to miss anything. Jan Biglin and her family were members of St. Stephen's Parish when I became the parish priest in 1976. Jan was in her teens at the time, and she reminded me this morning that we were in a Bible study together along with a former bishop, and here at St. Stephen's, we were in that study for about a year. When I became her parish priest, little did I know at the time that she would eventually become my parish priest. But I am glad that she returned to Canada, was ordained, and 2 years ago became the incumbent of St. Stephen's Parish. Jan is an exceptional preacher, and each Sunday I learn much from her sermons. Now for some statistics about the person you are about to hear speak on the subject, how to avoid being deceived by the occult. This is a subject that Christians need to be aware of so that they are not led away from the cross of Christ, which is the center of Christian healing, into counterfeit areas that could be, and often are, detrimental to their spiritual health. The Reverend Dr. Jan Biglin-Pritchard grew up in Saskatoon and spent much of her adult life in the UK. She is an Anglican priest with a doctorate in systematic theology from the University of Durham in England. She was impacted by the charismatic renewal movements in the 70s and the 80s. She experienced healing and began to pray with others for healing in the context of the teachings of John Wimber, John and Paula Sanford of Elijah House, the work of the Acorn Healing Trust in the United Kingdom, and other healing movements within the Church of England. Jan spent much of her professional career as a theological lecturer with the Open University, the Church Army College in Sheffield, and then at the Methodist Seminary in Bristol. She taught in the areas of world religions, new religious movements, ethics, and Christian doctrine, and also had the pastoral oversight of groups of students. She returned to Canada in 2005 and was ordained into the Anglican Church of Canada shortly after that. She began her ordained ministry by serving a Three Point rural parish along with being the director of the Prairie Center for Ecumenism. Since 2011, she has been the incumbent of St. Stephen's Anglican Church in Saskatoon. Ladies and gentlemen, the Reverend Dr. Jan Biglin-Pritchard.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. And the title of my paper that I'm going to read at you, and I hope you won't die in the process of listening to it, is called Be Wise as Serpents, But Innocent as Doves, the fine lines between New Age and Christian healing. The quote, of course, is from Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. See, I am sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Well, as Larry was saying, as a young person, I was impacted by the charismatic renewal. And in those days, we were making the discovery that God was much more real and immediate than we had ever imagined. And despite the sobering experience of 4 years in a critical liberal seminary, that sense of God's immediacy never quite left. I could not discount what I had seen and experienced. I tried to fit it together with the worldview which my seminary training was insisting was the grown-up, rational worldview of a Christian in our time. This task took me to the UK for graduate work. One of the reasons I wanted to go there was because so much was happening there among people who were both Anglican and charismatic, including serious theological scholars who did not leave their brains at the door when they walked into church. When I finished my doctorate in systematics, the only teaching job I could get was in world religions. And I combined this with a post as research officer for Jim Thompson, who was then the Bishop of Stepney. Now, Jim was soon chosen to be the new Bishop of Bath and Wells. And yes, there really is a diocese called the Diocese of Bath and Wells in the UK. This diocese contains Glastonbury, which is a very prominent New Age site connected to all the legends of King Arthur. And because Jim was going there, he started getting correspondence from strange groups and individuals. And so he asked his research officer to prepare a briefing paper for him on the New Age movement. Well, I spent 6 months doing that, and my goodness, it was an eye-opener. Soon after that, I began working at an Anglican college for evangelists, where I was asked to teach a course on cults and the occult. As I began, via all these experiences, to look at the alternatives that are out there to Orthodox Trinitarian Christian faith, and to get a sense of the spiritual experiences that they promoted, I began to reflect on my own experience as a charismatic Christian. Now, what I noticed were some similarities between charismatic gifts and the New Age and occult paranormal experiences. Many spirit-filled Christians speak in tongues, but some Mormons do, and some shamans also do when they are in trance. Christians sometimes speak words of prophecy, but so do many esoteric and New Age groups. A recent Google search on the prophecies of Nostradamus yielded 2,170,000 results. I didn't go and read them. Many Christians receive words of knowledge about others, but so do mediums and channelers. Christians practice healing by prayer and laying on of hands. So do spiritualists and many kinds of practitioners of New Age energy healing. So what do we make of the similarities, and is this a problem? The pluralist worldview is quick to say, well, there is no problem because it's all the same really, isn't it? It would assert that there are no fundamental differences between the Christian healer who anoints you with oil, lays hands on you, and prays for your depression, and the New Ager who uses their hands and mind to build a wall of spiritual protection around your aura. The rationalist worldview would also say that the similarities are no problem because all efforts at spiritual healing are equally a load of nonsense. On this view, spiritual healers, Christian and otherwise, simply work to arouse the placebo effect. That is, the suffering person is moved by the care shown for them, or maybe impressed with the ritual used, and the conviction comes that something has been done, and that therefore stimulates the sick person's inherent self-healing. Well, so much for the pluralist and rationalist worldviews. From a Christian worldview, this similarity between Christian charismatic phenomena and occult paranormal experience is a problem. For Christians hold that Jesus Christ brings about a new possibility for human beings, which is not available elsewhere. So they are automatically uncomfortable with the idea that it's all the same, really, and equally uncomfortable with the idea that it's all just smoke and mirrors. Christians might explain the similarity between the charismatic and the paranormal in a couple of ways. The first would think about our common humanity and its God-given design. The human mind, body, and spirit is fairly standard issue across time and culture. There are only so many ways that it can respond. Our very humanness means that there are only so many shapes that spiritual experience can take. Or to paraphrase St. Augustine, we all have a God-shaped hole in us. That's where the second part comes in. We all do have a God-shaped hole, but what we attempt to fill the hole with is varied, and that makes all the difference. And this brings us to the idea of counterfeits. God, the Holy Spirit, gives us spiritual gifts, the charismata. The enemy, who cannot create but can only mimic, provides spiritual lookalikes, good-looking counterfeits that either do not last, do not satisfy, or come with additional baggage. We can fill the God-shaped hole with the things of God, or we can get fooled into filling the God-shaped hole with counterfeits. But telling one from the other can be hard. The enemy takes a good thing and corrupts it, or makes a fake that seems like the real thing. Developing the discernment to tell God's gifts from the enemy's knockoffs is vital for all Christians, but especially vital for those who are engaged in the Christian healing ministry. To be involved with Christian healing is to be involved with the supernatural. It is an incredible privilege, but with it comes great responsibility. If your discernment is poor, you can limit and damage yourself and others. The counterfeits that we meet up with in the world of spiritual healing usually come to us through the New Age movement, which is the soft and user-friendly end of the occult. So it's worth having a look at what New Agers believe. The New Age movement heralds the dawning of a new era for humanity, they say, and a new era for the earth. The movement represents a convergence of attitudes and ideas from many different sources: post-Newtonian science, future studies, ecology, the cultural and ethical relativism that have developed in our secular pluralist societies, the desire for non-invasive healthcare, psychology, Eastern religion, Western occult philosophy, Aboriginal primal religion, 60s radical politics, and the hippie drug culture. It's quite a brew. Having developed slowly in the earlier decades of the 20th century and put its head above the parapet in the 60s and 70s, the New Age movement has now emerged as a self-confident, well-financed, and widespread social and spiritual movement. It is now part of the cultural fabric of the United States, Canada, and Western Europe. The New Age is about spiritual progress and spiritual evolution, they say. But it's also about ancient wisdom. It is the bubbling up to the surface of a very ancient religious tradition. That tradition originated perhaps in the East, but has existed since the time of the ancient Greeks in the West. Modern adherents call it the esoteric or hidden religious tradition. Characteristic of it is a desire for direct experience, for gnosis, that lovely Greek word, G-N-O-S-I-S, gnosis, of the divine, coupled with a desire to retain one's independence from it. So that's important. New Agers are looking for direct experience of divine things, but they want to retain their independence. Direct experiential knowledge is much preferred to faith or trust or obedience. Those attitudes are seen as being appropriate to human childhood. It's something out of which one grows into the maturity of gnosis. And I want to quote a piece from a man who is an anthropologist and a shaman. His name is Michael Harner, and he wrote a book in 1990 called The Way of the Shaman. And in his preface, he expresses the attitude which is characteristic not only of modern shamanism, but of New Age as a whole. Here it comes. One reason for the increasing interest in shamanism is that many educated thinking people have left the age of faith behind them. They no longer trust ecclesiastical dogma and authority to provide them with adequate evidence of the realms of the spirit, or indeed with evidence that there is spirit. Second-hand or third-hand anecdotes in competing and culture-bound religious texts from other times and places are not convincing enough to provide paradigms for their personal existence. They require higher standards of evidence. That's the end of the quote. So the age of faith has been left behind. We want to be experimental, say the New Agers. We want to know for ourselves. New Agers typically are the alienated children of both secular materialism and biblical religion. The secular materialist path has left them feeling an inner emptiness, which they can identify as spiritual. But the forms of biblical religion with which they are acquainted, and often only superficially, do not attract them, for they appear lifeless, head-led, guilt-ridden, and authoritarian. Interestingly enough, some New Age groups use Christian terminology, but they subtly transform some of the meanings. I was horrified to find a very popular channeled book called A Course in Miracles sitting on one of my parishioners' bookshelves. The parishioner shall remain nameless. Some groups see themselves, as did the early Gnostics, as being the true or higher Christianity. But there is in New Age a widespread negative reaction to Orthodox Christianity, which ranges from polite indifference to active hostility. Having forsaken the faith of their fathers, which was secular materialism, and that of their grandfathers, which was biblical religion, New Age seekers reach out for an alternative spirituality which satisfies their need for meaning and personal transformation without depriving them of intellectual and moral independence. Or to put it more bluntly, there is a desire for spiritual experience and spiritual power without attachment to the God of the Hebrew and Christian scriptures. The New Age solution for the human condition is expressed in terms of enlightenment rather than salvation. What is needed is for ignorance, that is, the judging of the world by its appearances, to be dispelled, and for human beings to accept existentially, that is, to realize, to make real, what has always been true. Salvation, in the sense of being rescued or restored, is not needed, for there is nothing to be saved from except ignorance. Enlightenment, in turn, brings about personal transformation, a lifelong growth process marked by increasing wholeness and personal power, and, of course, the possibility for the transformation of society. Well, the main New Age way to seek enlightenment is by entering altered states of consciousness, ASCs for short, altered states of consciousness. Through the use of techniques such as mind-emptying meditation, drumming, chanting, ecstatic dancing, sensory deprivation, fasting, mind-altering drugs, self-hypnosis, and visualization, a state of consciousness is achieved which is different from ordinary reality and in which the seeker has strange and sometimes profound experiences. New Agers believe that it is right to actively try to induce altered states of consciousness. They claim that their ASC experiences are the same as the mystical states of prayer that you meet in world religions, including classical Christianity. And if you go into lots of New Age bookstores, you will find Christian mystical writers there, like St. John of the Cross, Julian of Norwich, Hildegard of Bingen, and Meister Eckhart. Now, some Christian scholars, like Evelyn Underhill in her 1911 classic on mysticism, stress the similarities among all mystical traditions. But Christian experts in the field also identify important differences between Christian mysticism and that of both Eastern religion and the New Age. One of the big differences between Christian and New Age mysticism is the question of who takes the initiative. Roman Catholic historian Father Michael Aumann repeatedly insists in his spiritual theology that in the Christian tradition, genuine mystical experiences occur only at God's initiative. They are not sought after or induced by techniques, but occur during the course of ordinary vocal or mental prayer or discursive meditation. any active attempts to induce mystical experiences are considered harmful and wrong-headed, opening the personality to delusion and spiritual deception. This stands in the sharpest contrast to the New Age understanding of altered states of consciousness as being a desirable achievement for which one takes the initiative by using spiritual technologies. Now, for Christian healers, I think there's a lesson to be learned here, and that is that for our healing ministries, we need to trust God, wait on God, place ourselves in a receptive position before God, but we never seek to work ourselves or anybody else up into a frenzy or to induce experiences. We're also very wary of any healing techniques, so-called, which appear to rely on any kind of hypnosis or trance induction. Now, altered states of consciousness, these experiences are thought by the New Agers not only to be just as real as ordinary reality, but actually much more real, as windows into ultimate reality. Christians and New Agers would agree on dismissing the secular materialist view that our ordinary day-to-day state of consciousness is the only reality, but New Agers seem to operate on a very simple either-or between ordinary and non-ordinary reality, and they ascribe a high value to all species of the latter. Christians are much more nuanced in their approach to non-ordinary reality. They distinguish between genuine spiritual experience, mystical experience, glimpses of ultimate reality given by God, and psychic or paranormal experience. Those would be non-ordinary experiences of or communication from human or spiritual beings other than God, and still between more categories like hallucinations and fantasy. On the Christian view, altered states of consciousness experiences could come from four different kinds of sources and be ranked accordingly. The New Agers' uncritical acceptance of altered states of consciousness experience leads to a breakdown for them in the distinction between reality and fantasy. So alongside the ethical relativism that is rooted in their monistic understanding of reality, and we'll come on to talk about what monism is in a minute, the New Age promotes a cognitive relativism as well. After all, it argues, who are we to say what is real and what is not? What is truth and what is illusion? By contrast, Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Jesus was not a liar or a madman. Then these words point us to the idea that there is truth and that we can know what it is. Christian healing practice, which reflects this view, is going to be characterized by simple, clear biblical teaching and a lack of trappings, show, and fuss. We don't need to surround the ministry with a mysterious aura. We just need to show up with faith and let God be God. So what does the New Age and the occult philosophy teach about God? Despite its emphasis on the freedom of discovery, it's kind of funny how the central New Age conclusions about ultimate reality are remarkably similar. Kevin Logan is a minister with substantial experience of working with occult and New Age people, and he says, it was amazing how all these New Agers were alike when it came to basics. They all pretended to be free spirits doing their own thing, attuned to their own inner consciousness, yet they all sounded the same, as though they had been programmed in some subtle way. At the core of New Age belief about spiritual reality is monistic pantheism. That's your $64 word for the day, monistic pantheism. This teaches that God is all there is, and that all there is God. That ultimately there is but one self, that's self with a capital S, of which we are all part. The self, the one, ultimate reality, or God on this understanding, is identified with the Advaita Hindu concept of Brahman, divinity, as an impersonal, infinite consciousness and force, possessing being, awareness, and bliss. Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Other New Agers do not use the word God so much, but speak about cosmic force, life essence, etheric, kundalini serpent force, chi, or prana. They might talk about odd, or magnetic force, or celestial hierarchies, a chain of life-giving spiritual beings, or shakti, the Hindu term for divine energy, or they might speak of elemental essence. Now, New Age healers often talk in terms of unblocking your chi, or letting the life force flow freely through you, or raising it up through the chakras of your spine. Energy healers are all about improving the flow of divine energy through your body, mind, and spirit. It kind of sounds scientific, but it is monistic pantheism nonetheless. This non-personal conception of God is alien to the biblical conception of a personal God who is distinct from the created universe, loving it but not merged with it. Understand that, and you understand much about the New Age approach to spirituality. For Christians, a deepening spirituality is about a deepening relationship with a known and trusted person. And God, the goal, becomes the focus of attention rather than the process of growing closer to God. But for New Agers, a deepening spirituality is fundamentally a journey into the dark. There is no personal divine partner for a relationship, only a deeper exploration into one's deepest self as a gateway to the self with a capital S. And as we overcome the illusion of separateness which ordinary life presents us, New Agers say that we achieve self-realization, the realization that one's true self is God. This goal is held to be both mysterious and inexpressible. So you can see why the New Age focus is often less on the goal and more on the spiritual process or technique of getting there. I just wanted to say a word about the New Age understandings of the Christ. In harmony with monism, which says, I am God, you are God, all are one, and as part of its relativism, New Age endorses all spiritual paths as equally valid. All the great religious teachers of the world are seen, without very close attention to the detail of their messages, as avatars of the One. Thus, Jesus is honored along with Buddha, Krishna, Muhammad, and countless others. New Agers are usually happy to acknowledge Jesus as the Christ, but the Christ they have in mind is the cosmic Christ, the Christ principle, which has incarnated innumerable times in innumerable avatars. And incarnating the Christ principle, or being Christed, is a legitimate spiritual aspiration for any sincere New Age seeker. And I can recommend a book on that. It's Douglas Grootheis's book, Revealing the New Age Jesus. And you might want to compare that, which is an Orthodox Christian book, with Matthew Fox's heterodox book, The Coming of the Cosmic Christ. Here again we see how similar and yet how different New Age religious concepts are to Christian ones, and how careful Christians dialoguing with New Agers need to be about terminology. I mean, we tend to assume that anybody who talks positively about Jesus must be okay. Even the goal of incarnating the Christ principle does not sound so far from some of the stuff that St. Paul said. But look again. Christians have as their goal the formation of Christ within me, the hope of glory. And we long to grow up into the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we can say with St. Paul, it is not I that live, but Christ who lives in me. But the Christian's desire is for full relationship and conformity to the now risen but historical person, Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of God who incarnated once only. Despite Paul's flowery language, Christian Christ mysticism does not seek merger or replacement of the individual human personality by that of a supernatural Christ entity, but rather the maturity and sanctification of the human personality through fellowship with Jesus, so that it becomes one of the many brethren of whom Christ is the firstborn. Then we come to the issue of spirits, spirit helpers, power animals, and New Age angels. The facelessness of ultimate reality for New Agers is compensated for by belief in and attachment to a host of non-physical, intelligent, supernatural beings, ranging from powerful gods to tiny nature spirits. This belief may include a full-bodied conviction of the objective reality of these spirit entities, or it may, especially at the beginning, be more nuanced through the New Age concept of myth. Names and characteristics of spirit beings vary and include the devas and devatas of Hinduism, gods of the ancient Egyptian and other pantheons, angels, members of Gnostic-style celestial hierarchies like you have in theosophy. It could be ghosts of the dead, especially of great spiritual teachers. Could be extraterrestrials and demons, that's spelled D-A-E-M-O-N-S, and they're not necessarily seen as evil. All spirits are held to have some power, and New Agers are often keen to tap into the power of particular spirits. The role of spirit mediumship, or trance channeling, or just channeling as it's often called now, in the formation of the New Age movement is now recognized. The influence of channeled teachings and books is widespread, as are the spiritistic aspects of some Aboriginal traditional practice. New Age teachers often encourage followers to find a spirit helper or an inner guide in healing and personal growth work. And there is evidence of a link between Hindu yogic practice and spiritism. Biblical Christianity has always recognized the reality of supernatural beings other than God, although some post-Enlightenment theologies have tried to discard this element of the tradition. But where biblical Christianity differs from the New Age is on whether it is desirable to try to communicate with them. Actively seeking to communicate with spirits, to borrow power from them, or to seek union with them, as many New Agers do, is both unnecessary and highly dangerous. You don't know who you're talking to. It's unnecessary because intimate communication with the most loving, wise, and trustworthy of all spiritual beings, God, the Holy Trinity, meets every conceivable need for this kind of communication and guidance. A New Ager who converted to Christianity told me that in relationship with the God of Christians, he found the fulfillment of what he had sought and partially found in the New Age. His new attitude to spirit communication was, "Why fool around with the little guys when you can go straight to the top?" To exchange communication with this God for communication with spirits is, in the words of Romans 1, to have exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. Dealing with spirits other than God is highly dangerous. According to biblical teaching, God is the only perfect being. All others involve a degree of imperfection or limitation. And many have actively rebelled against God, have embraced evil, and desire the downfall of humanity. In seeking spirit communication, one has no way of knowing what kind of spirit has been contacted, and it would be in the nature of evil spirits heavily to disguise their true nature. Scripture tells us that the devil is the father of lies. Even some New Age writers warn of the dangers involved. That American shaman Michael Harner, for instance, insists that guardian spirits are wholly good and are possessed by the shaman rather than possessing him or her. Yet he mentions that there can be involuntary ways of acquiring a guardian spirit. That sounds a lot to me like being possessed. He also warns his students against having anything to do with certain kinds of spirit creatures they may meet on their altered states of consciousness journeys, saying that they are evil. And while claiming to practice only healing shamanism himself, Harner also notes the existence of bad or bewitching shamans who send spirit helpers into victims' bodies to cause illness or death. One of my sources, his name is Elliot Miller, and he wrote a useful book called A Crash Course on the New Age Movement. And he has a look at channeling. And his review of channeling suggests that while channeled entities at first appear to be benevolent and communication with them is voluntary, this can change. Cases of involuntary possession resulting from channeling contained features so unusual that German psychiatrist Hans Bender created a new classification to fit them called mediumistic psychosis. The cases involved malignant entities which drove the host to attempt both suicide and murder. The New Age interest in spirit communication, along with being dangerous, is also a little bit ironic. If it is true that each individual is God, and one needs only to look within to realize one's divinity, the desire for external information and interaction seems a bit absurd. Perhaps it points to the reality that in each of us there isn't divinity, but a capacity for relatedness to the divine. This option of relating to the true divine, not being taken up, there remains that God-shaped hole in the individual, which the faceless, non-personal one, or self, cannot fill. Recourse to the spirits offers a substitute. Well, I would suggest that there is only one spirit by which it is safe to be possessed, and that is the Holy Spirit. When we ask to be filled with the Holy Spirit, we are speaking the language of spirit possession, of spirit initiation. The difference is that God the Holy Spirit is utterly trustworthy, works on us only by invitation, and never overpowers the individual personality, but rather refines and enhances it. Now, you may be wondering about the connection between New Age and the occult. I see them as ends of the spectrum, really. Occult practice and esoteric philosophy are intimately connected, and both are